Good afternoon. We're back after that long celebration of capitalism. We had a longer than usual celebration of capitalism, and just in case you were thinking we had turned into all capitalism, no program, we just crushed both commercial breaks into one, mostly because we've been playing. Claire, are you there? Lyle, are you there? Mostly that was what was going on. And we know
you. For whatever reason, it's hard to keep both of them on the phones at the same time.
Those darn phones. They're new and everything, and we're having a hard time working them.
Jihadis.
Well, we talked about using Skype, and, well, you know how that goes. We tried to infiltrate a new technology, and that was a failed experiment. So, anyway, we have Lyle on there now, so we can talk to him for 5 seconds while we try to find Claire. And then if they're both on the phone, then they'll both be on the phone. They won't be able to hear each other, and, you know, we'll go back to the previous hour, same deal, different players. But you know what? We like to mix it up for you here. So you can find all of our information about our guests and the commercial-free archive, actually, for anybody that you'd like to forward this to at wethepeopleradio.us. Fun show today, and actually we got smartened up in the first hour. We were talking about terrorism, and Claire told us to stop talking about terrorism. So we changed the name of the show. It's called It's Time to Stop Talking About Terrorism and Start Talking About Islamic Jihad. So that's a much better title anyway. It's quite a bit longer, but, you know, I've got the web space for it. So the first hour we had Bruce Moran from Security Solutions Technology was with Claire Lopez from the Center of Security Policy. So now we're trying to hang Claire over into the second hour and dovetail her in with Dr. Lyle Verpacki, who is Sentinel Intelligence Services. So
okay, nobody hang up.
Nobody move. You know, you'd think just talking to a few people on the phone would be just so easy. No, it's not that easy. It's never that easy. All right, so Claire, can you hear us? You can always hear us, but can you hear Lyle at all?
I can certainly hear you.
Lyle, can you give us the first couple bars of something you know well?
You want me to sing? I can sing.
Oh,
yeah, I can hear Claire, by the way.
All right, everybody's on.
My God.
Claire's heard me sing. She doesn't want that show hanging up.
She spoke up pretty quick right there. I think you're probably Lyle.
No, I can hear him. I can hear him just fine. So we don't have any script for this hour, which probably explains our fantastic beginning. Claire, you want to kick us off and see where we go this hour? Because you kind of got cut off at the pass in the last one just because of our sound issues.
Yeah, well, we were just sort of discussing in general terms the state of the global jihad, certainly what's going on in Europe, and how we in the United States here are probably a number of years behind where Europe is. For a number of reasons, including just plain numbers of Muslims in our respective countries, the fact that the United States is at a stage still of civilization jihad. Yes, I mean, there are the terror attacks that do get through, and those are not going to stop, but overall, the state of the jihad in the United States is one of civilization jihad so far. They're not ready to go kinetic, as they have in Europe yet. But if we don't get ourselves back on track, we will be following Britain, France, Belgium, Germany, Netherlands.
Is it basically numbers that tips that over?
Well, the tipping point apparently comes, surprisingly, at a rather low level, but around the 3-4% mark of Muslim population within a larger non-Muslim population. That 3-4% Muslim is a tipping point, apparently, at which point the violence increases, the demands, the aggressiveness of those demands for implementation of Sharia and so forth increases drastically.
And you gave us a number in the first hour. Where do we sit right now as far as the U.S. population goes? We're less than a percent?
Right.
Or?
So we have about 315 or 20 million people overall, and of that, approximately 3.3 million are Muslims, so that means something under 1% or close to 1%, perhaps, in the United States are Muslims.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, and yet it seems like the Muslim dialogue in this country right now seems to dominate the news cycle. In fact, I just was listening the other day, which I probably need to stop doing, but they're talking about having Muslim safe spaces now.
Oh, God, yes, that dopey woman.
Yeah, there's just, it's a crazy amount for such a small percentage of the population. It seems like a crazy amount of airtime they get, and all the news agencies seem to want to talk about, and for good reason. I
but they also want to talk about how it's and give them airtime for how they're being persecuted, blah blah blah. And my guess is that that's a precursor to the rest.
Well, what we have to understand and take a step back and realize, first of all, is what is the enemy threat doctrine? It is the doctrine, law, and scripture of Islam. And what is their objective? It's very simple. A global Islamic state, call it a caliphate, or Shiites might call it an imamate, under rule of Islamic law. And they achieve that through jihad. That's it. It's that simple. But people don't want to accept that, and there comes the debate. But once we understand what they seek, and the means they use to seek it, then we can begin to formulate our own national security strategy to counter it, but in a realistic way, understanding what it is they fight for and why.
And that's a huge consideration.
Yeah, and that's where I think we all need to smarten up a little bit on.
Because people are totally lulled into this whole religion of peace fantasy.
Well, it certainly wasn't based on
I hear
that.
Lyle taking a deep breath.
Yeah. I just took a cup of coffee. Swear your coffee. You know what Claire says is absolutely 100%. I have nothing to add to that part. What I'm looking at, and Claire and I have discussed this along with others in the field, is the subtlety, and yet maybe not so subtle, but the subtlety by which our little communities, villages, towns are being taken over. I just got a letter yesterday. I've been gone for a couple of days, so I'm sorry, I'm behind the eight ball. I just got a letter yesterday from a person in a small community asking if I could help them or direct them somewhere because in their community they have a social worker at the local school who's a Muslim. The administrator or vice principal, I don't have it figured out yet because the person wrote it in a vague way, but the social worker at the school is a Muslim. The vice principal or the administrator at the school who authorizes homeschooling and reviews homeschooling progress is a Muslim. The CPS worker at the school is a Muslim. The nurse practitioner at the school and also in the ER, the local walk-in emergency room, is a Muslim. And the doctor at the ER is a Muslim. They also have a couple of other Muslims in very key positions within the community government there. And so what I'm seeing happen, and now Claire and I have discussed this, because we're seeing it in elected officials also at the local and even state level, is that they are making inroads at a very subtle way under the radar in all the key positions that literally have a lot to do with day in and day out activities in our lives. Have they really sprung their Sharia yet? No, not yet. But when you look at what Claire said, 3% is very, very low. I agree, in the overall population. But what they've done through civilization jihad is they've gone after very key positions in our communities, and these positions have authority over our day-to-day lives, and they're infiltrating all of these different positions, and therefore they're influencing the change of our culture.
And I think a really classic example of that is the mayor of London.
Well, what I was going to say is that what Lyle is saying is so very important, And I'm going to go back to what he talked about, the school and the local health services clinic emergency room. We just had break into the national news within the last couple of months, a federal case of female genital mutilation, FGM,
yes.
in the state
yes.
of Michigan. It's being investigated, and we can go into more detail about all of that and the circumstances surrounding it. Suffice to say that FGM is a federal crime. It's a felony and has been since 1996. But when you have Muslims in all of these key positions at an elementary school, at the clinic, as the social worker, a Muslim child, a girl, little girl, is never going to have a chance to even be seen by a non-Muslim doctor or social
Correct.
Worker, perhaps her entire childhood up till the age of 18. And so the only chance for finding out about such atrocities as this Muslim doctor butcher in Michigan is, as I think happened in that case, a whistleblower or something like that. So, again, what Lyle said is so important to understand, that when they get into positions like that, they can control a lot of things and keep a parallel Muslim society separate from the broader host society. You're thinking they're part of it, they're integrated. No, they're not. They're living in separate, parallel societies in which women and children, little girls, may be deprived of access and protection under constitutional law.
That's really an amazing point. Most folks would think, well, gee, they're doctors, they're nurses, they're integrating. But the big picture looks like it's a whole different game.
Well, if you line it up like that.
Yeah, yeah. When you look at the real
counselor, the local clinic. I mean,
yeah,
that keeps the kid from ever getting outside
right.
that loop.
That's right.
Well, this is one of the things Claire and I and others in the field have begun to discuss in rapid succession, because we're seeing it spread very quickly. Claire will correct me if I'm wrong.
Provided she can hear
what
you.
Nothing,
just kidding. I said provided she can hear you.
No, that's really, yeah,
here,
providing
Dr.
she
McCarthy
can hear me. That was really neat that she even
Claire.
Agreed with me. That's big. Now I feel great.
and she said you're never wrong, so, you know, the bar is like way high.
Oh, yeah, man. It's like,
fantastic.
Yeah, I can't wait to tell my wife, Claire agreed with me. we've been discussing this and looking at different reports for about a year, I think, Claire, isn't it? About a year, year and a half?
Maybe so, yeah.
About a year and a half, because I became aware about a year and a half ago of in a couple of states in the West, Western states, a couple of the states in the Western states, let me be clear like that, where Muslims had gone ahead and invited legislators to Ramadan dinners. On the surface, it doesn't seem like anything. And indeed, the letter, the actual correspondence to the state legislators in these states was, hey, you know, we just want to reach out and let you see something. It's a cultural exchange. Well, very innocent. And the legislators went. Well, then they went again to another event and then another event. Then they were partially funded to go to Turkey to participate in something. And what I began to see here...
Set the hook.
Huh?
Yeah, it's like setting the hook.
Well, pretty much, and that really caught our attention, and I talked to Claire about it, I talked to a couple of others I won't name, Claire knows what I'm saying, because I wanted their counsel on it, and what I was seeing is an extreme seductiveness taking place, I think I invented a word, but they were being seduced at the local city council level, at the county level with commissioners or boards of supervisors, up to the state legislators. And at these local levels, they were implementing their cultural ways under the radar, not drawing any attention, and clearly not wanting to be adversarial, if you will allow me that. Claire can jump in on this. But they were doing everything they can to show that, no, we're a part of all of this. We're just a different culture. We have a little bit different belief system, but we're all together, kind of a kumbaya.
Yeah, we all agree with each other.
Yeah.
I mean,
and
this is
yet
exactly
they did
the
not
way it works. This is the very definition of civilization jihad.
Yes.
And I was talking in the earlier hour about how the forces of Islam are attacking our pillars of support of society, as I call them.
Yes.
And among those pillars, as I said back then, are academia, the courts, and our legal system, certainly government at all levels, civic government, and all the way from local city council to federal, congressional, law enforcement, local law enforcement, national security, media, so forth. And a society, a civilization, does not just fall by kinetic attack. It falls because it's already been hollowed out. It's already been debilitated from within by civilization jihad, and this is the way it goes, what Lyle is just talking about. The seemingly innocent invitation to local civic leaders, and they'll also go for the faith community leaders, journalists, and others, to aim information operations at them, propaganda, if you will, that gradually brings those targeted people into a relationship of friendship with the local jihadis. We call them jihadis in suits because, no, they don't have great big bushy beards and they don't have suicide vests on, but they're jihadis nonetheless. They're just wearing suits and they're deceptive and they're very, very good at what they do, to the point that when they begin to push for concessions, as they do, to Sharia, to introducing Sharia, to allowing an element of Sharia, whatever it may be, special foot baths at the airports. By the way, there are no foot baths in the Middle East in the airports, only in the West.
Oh, really?
Do we actually have them?
Prayer times to get off of work and go take time off to go pray. A special, time off for kids from school. These are all incremental demands that are made step by step, very slowly. They don't care if it takes 300, 500 years to do this. They're on that timetable.
Sure.
So it's like starter jihad.
And
yeah, once it starts, you can't take it away.
Made by those who have been roped into relationships like Lyle is just describing.
Well, we've learned that what Claire's now saying, too, it sounds like we're tag-teaming. In a way, we are, because we're seeing this unfold across the nation now. Enough, a significant number of Muslims from various countries have come into America now. They've established their own little territories, and now they're branching out. Another example, which is one that she did mention, is that they're now working at the local level with law enforcement, and they're inventing, if you will, I mean, they're basically inventing Islamic law enforcement advisory boards. And that's sort of a name. I changed the name a wee bit, just a wee bit, because I have to protect the cities and other communities. But there are local law enforcement advisory boards. And what they do is they sit with the chiefs of police and command staff people to, quote unquote, bring a cultural awareness to law enforcement as to the Islamic ways. Well, when you get into Islamic or Sharia law, there's a number of things our Western law does not accept, but they do in Sharia. And now there is a tug of war taking place under the radar, very calm, with people in $1,000 suits, and I'm not making that up. Claire can testify to this. They can speak better English than I do. They went to very advanced schooling. They're more westernized, if you'll allow me that, just to draw a word picture, if I may, than many of us. And they come in and they start to teach and allow law enforcement to begin to understand and reach out and touch the Islamic community in a more gracious manner, if you will. Well, what they're doing is literally presenting policies and rule changes. They've affected some law at the local level, usually policy, not state law, not yet, but they're working on changing policies, law enforcement policies, investigatory policies, the way you investigate crimes. They are working at developing no-go zones within communities in the United States. Here in the United States, they're working on developing communities where law enforcement will no longer go into it. They want their own law enforcement in adherence to a Sharia law. This sounds absolutely far-fetched, but it is happening as we're talking about it.
Well, if you don't think that's far-fetched, what other culture or religion is allowed to do that in this country or has done it and set up no-go zones?
None.
And here's the difference. Lyle's absolutely correct in everything he just said, and we've been in places, as I teach courses to law enforcement in Arizona and many other places, along with John Guandolo of Understanding the Threat, understandingthethreat.com, for those who might want to take a look at the website. The local law enforcement come up and tell us about these incipient or developing no-go zones. Maybe not as full-fledged as something like a Molenbeek in Brussels, but it's headed in that direction. The difference is that you may have ethnic communities in many cities, the Slovenian, the Hungarian, the Polish, the that, where people gather together, and this goes back, you know, maybe two or three generations to the first immigrant community that came from, let's say, Eastern Europe to the United States, and there they have, kept customs of music and food and cuisine and things like that. They hold festivals in the summertime, typically. It's a very different thing than a community which typically is centered around a mosque or Islamic center, which we know from Islamic doctrine and the history of Muhammad's own biography that a mosque is essentially a command and control center for jihad. It is a place for training, indoctrination, and the storage of weapons, as the West Europeans dismay. It is also a place which is used to expand outwardly to establish a community where the businesses as well as the residences are now owned and occupied by other Muslims, and then from that population is gleaned financial contributions to strengthen the community.
Correct.
And all of this sounds perfectly fine and lawful and would be if the ultimate intention, as we know because they've told us so, were not the substitution of the U.S. Constitution and the laws derived from it with Sharia.
Yeah.
All
right, we've got to take a quick break here. We've put capitalism off long enough. We've got to go back and visit them. They took the lion's share at the beginning, but we've got to get back to that. So we're here chatting with Lyle Rapacki and Claire Lopez, and we're not talking about terrorism. We're talking about Islamic Jihad, and that really is not an impossibility in our country, as we're hearing today. And if you have friends who think it is, please join us online, wethepeopleradio.us, and we'll have a commercial-free archive up this afternoon. But we still love capitalism, even though it's commercial-free.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. Sometimes they don't tell the truth. Smiling faces tell lies, and I've got proof. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Can you dig it?
And we're back. The old smiling faces song, it always comes up on this topic. Claire, Got a question for you. Had somebody kind of call in, you know, we've got all the phone lines jammed up, so. And I had seen that you tweeted this yesterday, 17 hours ago, that somebody had posted Sharia was banned in the United States in 1952. The McLaren, what do you call it?
McCarran-Walter
Act. McCarran-Walter Act, yeah. Okay, so you had said that, no, Sharia has never been banned in the U.S. Alien law is only a problem when it conflicts with the U.S. Constitution. So if people think that's going to save us, why is that not true?
Why is,
like, is
what not true?
Is the 1952 McCarran-Walter Act, I mean, is that the secret weapon to this?
No, nothing to do with Sharia.
It has nothing to do with it.
I don't know why they would have said that. It does not ban Sharia, period.
It keeps coming up. So
I just don't know where they're getting that from.
Okay. So I just thought we would get, because I was reading about it earlier.
So that, what does that act do?
As I recall, and I don't have it in front of me, but I believe that's the act.
I have a little blurb here if you want me to read it.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Yeah, because I was looking at the, I actually had the post up. I sort of snaked you there. I was ahead. It says, Chapter 2, Section 212, is the prohibition of entry into the U.S. of alien, if the alien belongs to an organization seeking to overthrow the United States government by force, violence, or other unconstitutional means. Any immigration without assimilation is invasion by enemy forces.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, would that, I mean, these people often, they're not necessarily coming here.
They're extrapolating. People who read that and make the decision or reach the conclusion that somehow that bans Sharia are kind of extrapolating from what the law actually says. And of course, the law does not say anything about banning Sharia.
Okay, because, yeah, this post, I've seen this before. And it always, the big header is, Islam is not allowed in the USA.
No, that's not true.
Good. Well, I just, not to put too fine a point on it, but this does come up a lot, even on Twitter as recently as 17 hours ago. So, okay, so that's not going to save us. We're going to have to save ourselves again. Darn it.
Something that Claire mentioned about the Michigan doctor that they have now uncovered that was doing the genitalia mutilation. It's over 100 girls. I don't know if you knew that, but over 100 young girls have now been recorded as undergoing that custom or ritual, depending on how you want to use the word. That's just atrocious. And that's an example, just one example. And I think Claire and I could give you multiple examples of how this stuff is infiltrating our culture, our belief systems, our values, et cetera, et cetera. And they have no intention of stopping. Would you agree,
well,
Claire?
Well, exactly. Now, what we do have as federal law is a 1996 ban on FGM, female genital mutilation. And so the case in Michigan that was uncovered a few months ago involves a Muslim doctor, a woman, and a clinic owner and his wife. So those three people all are under arrest at the present time. The case is being investigated by the FBI and the Department of Justice precisely because there is an alleged violation of a federal law, not to mention the fact that you've got cross-border or interstate trafficking of minors by their mothers from Minnesota to Michigan to have this felony perpetrated against them. So all of that has brought in the federal law officials. But what I will say, and this gets back to Islam and Sharia, is that we have long known that Sunni Islamic law either obligates or condones and approves FGM explicitly under Sharia, under Islamic law, on the Sunni side of things. Depending on the school of jurisprudence, it's either obligatory under Shafi law or condoned and approved under the other schools. Now, what we found out in Michigan is that there is an obligation for FGM under a Shiite Islamic sect, a subsect of the Ismaili Shiite Muslims called the Dawoodi Bohra sect. It's primarily concentrated in western Pakistan, but there are communities now here in the United States, and as a matter of fact, because of an online website, we can look it up. There are 22, at least 22 listed Dawoodi Bohra Islamic centers and mosques around the United States, and in each one of those communities, because FGM is obligatory for the Dawoodi Bohra Shiite Muslims, guaranteed there will be networks and cases of FGM being performed in those communities.
Oh, my God.
Number one place for law enforcement to start looking to prosecute this, to investigate and prosecute the Dawoodi Bohra communities around the United States.
And that's in Farmington Hills, Michigan, if you want to really get specific.
That's this case, yeah.
Now, Farmington Hills. Now, one of the things they're going to argue, and we're talking about cultural here,
right,
how our culture is being seductively changed. The defense is going to take the position that this is religious practice and that these girls were not harmed, that they did undergo a religious ritual, and therefore, on religious grounds under the First Amendment, nothing should be done to them. That's what they're going to argue. You watch. And again, this is bringing a different culture into the United States, and they're using our laws when it's applicable to them to continue their own program. It's sort of like what happened yesterday across the country. I don't mean to change the subject, but there was 20 cities, I think, 28 cities where they had Americans come up and stand publicly against Sharia law, and they had rallies. They had one here in Phoenix.
They had one in Roseville in Sacramento. We did talk about it first hour because
I had somebody
who was really bugged about it because they felt that it was unnecessary. And
well, what's interesting that the person who thought it was unnecessary, whoever that was, would be in agreement with the Muslims and CAIR, C-A-I-R.
But they really aren't. They just don't understand that it's an actual issue.
Well, the First
Amendment come out now. CAIR has come
in
out.
In no way, shape, or form permits violation of federal law. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Yeah. But you see, when Americans stand up for their constitutional rights against organizations like Hamas, CAIR, etc., all of a sudden, the peaceful, calm, friendly, obedient, cheerful, thrifty Muslim community rears its head and goes back to their Quran and their teachings, and you can see it in full color. Other than that, they're very quiet. They are continuing to infiltrate at the local levels and bring their culture, their beliefs, their values, etc., into the local level, schools, hospitals, all the things we've already talked about and more, to change our culture from inside out. It's kind of like a Trojan horse.
Sure. And it's one little piece at a time.
Pretty much.
Until
kind of like how do you eat an elephant? You know,
yeah,
a little
exactly.
Bite at a time. And like Claire said, it doesn't matter to them if it takes 300 years. They don't care. They have one goal only, and that's to establish a caliphate. Americans historically are not that directed or focused, if you will. We have multiple things going on. We have a very blessed lifestyle, so we have multiple things that occupy our time. That's a plus, and it's also a negative. In this case, these people are razor-focused. They have one goal, and that's to establish a caliphate. Anything that gets in its way, they'll stop, reconnoiter, and figure out how to work through that blockage to continue on to their goal. Nothing will stand in the way of their goal.
No, and it's all connected. The social life, the religious life, the work life, the neighborhood life, it's all the same thing, where a lot of times ours is separate.
And Americans are very forgiving people. We're very
accepting.
I mean, we have our thugs and other things, but we're a very forgiving people by nature. And so when somebody stands up and declares that, well, this is my religion and my religious practices, we give them that latitude. And Claire's the expert on this part. I am not. To me, Islam is not. It's got religion connotations connected to it, but it's a political movement.
It's a big-time political movement. Let's
political and legal. Political and legal, because Sharia is legal. But they intend to establish a political environment, a caliphate, a way of running a government, if you will, outside of the Constitution of the United States. Any religious practices they can throw in there to make it look good, they'll do that. But it, to me, Islam is not a religion. Now, I stand corrected, Claire, if I'm wrong on that. But to me, you've heard me talk about this. It's more of a political and military.
You throw in aspects of worship of a deity does not automatically give you protection under the First Amendment of the Constitution.
That's true too.
If in the doctrine of this belief system are elements antithetical to, contradictory to, the U.S. Constitution and the laws derived from it.
So when we come back with you guys, we want to talk about how we turn this corner, how we get tough with it, because there are a lot of people who do get it at some level, but somehow we're going to have to mobilize those elements before we get mowed down by these guys. And I guess I meant that figuratively, but I guess literally works for them too. So quick break here to thank capitalism again and celebrate its existence. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back. Song enough. It wasn't funny when I was younger, but it's kind of funny now, in a creepy sort of way.
Yeah, creepy kind of way.
Yeah. Okay, you guys, I know we only have 6 minutes or something, but what we were all talking about here in the studio on the break is, what's the deal with Dearborn, Michigan? I mean, these guys they literally have their own universe going on there, and they seem to be completely getting away with it. So how do we stop that from...
That the United States federal level, state level, municipal level, allows sovereign territory to essentially secede from the writ of law of the United States, that is ceding sovereignty of our country to something that is not constitutional. And this is partly how certain places in Europe got to where they are today. I don't think we want to follow Molenbeek or Tower Hamlets in London or any of these other no-go zones that they've got in France and elsewhere.
No, and we're very, very close to that in Dearborn. I mean, it's really gone over the edge there.
Well, following with what you just said, in Cedar Riverside, that's a community, Cedar Riverside in Minneapolis, they now have Sharia cops patrolling the neighborhood. Local law enforcement is aware of this, and they're monitoring it, but they have not taken any steps to intervene. There is a mistake right there.
Oh, sure.
I'll defer to Claire, who's more expert
exactly right. And I've been to that neighborhood. I've talked to local law enforcement,
right,
who corroborate what Lyle just said. Are they afraid? Are they afraid of the former Justice Department of the United States coming down on them like a ton of bricks if they try to enforce U.S.
law? I think it's that, Claire. I think like we've all talked about with others in the field, not only are they worried historically about the Department of Justice coming down on them, but now they've got a city manager, a chief of police, and others. I'm not saying in that particular neighborhood or in that community, but what is taking place, and we can prove, I believe, over and over again, that the CAIR, C-A-I-R, and other forms of the Islamic movement have infiltrated and really affected city managers, city councils, chiefs of police. And so now the officer on the street is very aware that if he goes ahead and interferes with this stuff, he's looking at a career change.
Oh, yeah.
Does that make sense?
This is where we've gotten
to.
He's going to be fired, or worse.
He's going to be brought up on charges.
The new administration and new Attorney General Jeff Sessions will help to turn that around.
We pray so, yes. But so you were talking about Michigan and here in Minneapolis. I mean, what we already have happening in Dearborn and in other communities is what we've been talking about this last hour. You're beginning to see it now come to the surface. It's been under the radar. It's percolating, and now they're probing. They're checking to see how far they can get away, and that's why they've infiltrated schools, all sorts of local hospitals, local emergency centers. They're working their way throughout the culture, and when they feel comfortable enough, or that they've accomplished enough of a change in that little community, be a 3-mile radius, then they go ahead and begin to openly enforce Sharia law, and they wait to see exactly what kind of pushback will they get.
And that's exactly how it works, is test the waters, and each time you get a little more.
Correct.
Let me ask you, Claire, a kind of a specific question here. The Free Iran movement, the people who are supporting Miriam Rajavi,
yes.
Where do they fit in all this? Are they? I realize this is very simplistic, but are they good guys or bad guys?
A whole other show, I think. But
I know.
In brief, the Iranian Revolution of 1979 brought to power the Ayatollah Khomeini, his successor, supreme leader today, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and ushered in a Sharia and a jihad government. And I'm not saying that's straight out of the Iranian constitution.
Right, right.
So various opposition groups naturally have sprung up against this horrific jihad, human rights abusing, terror supporting, nuclear weapons developing regime. And among those, the largest, oldest, and I think best organized is the Democratic National Council of Resistance of Iran movement. Their website, National Council of Resistance of Iran, you can find that there. It is an umbrella political group of which one of the key members is the Mujahideen-e Khalq, which is one of the oldest opposition groups in Iran. It originally sprang up to oppose the Shah, who likewise was dictatorial and was not democratic, but certainly was no jihadi. And that group today continues its struggle to oppose and to change the regime in Iran. It is supported by many top Americans like Newt Gingrich, Rudy Giuliani, Tom
Ridge.
Right,
and are they kind of good?
So they're
not bad guys posing as good guys necessarily?
No, not at all. These are the best of the best. These are Iranian patriots.
We've had them on our show, so I just thought we'd
check. Many of them American patriots now in exile, of course, from Iran.
Great.
Become American citizens, too. But seek for American national security, the regime change in Iran, because of the threatening, not just human rights abuses, which are horrific, but the development of weapons of mass destruction, nuclear weapons, the ballistic missiles to deliver them, terror and jihad expansionist activities across the Middle East.
Then we'll continue to support them and chat with them online, and on the radio. We've had them on our show. I just thought, probably a good idea to run that by you before we accidentally blundered into something stupid.
Well, we're totally out of time.
And they have to air a ball game, so we have no overlap. So thanks, you guys. We really, really appreciate it. It was
Thank
way
you.
Too fast, and we want to do it again.
Thank you for having me.
You guys
have
a...
You too, Lau.
You guys enjoy your other time zones, evening and whatnot, and have a great one. You've been listening to We the People. We will have your archive up this afternoon, commercial free in a couple hours. WeThePeopleRadio.us.